Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales through Diamond to retailers for August 2017. This is what sells into stores, not what sold out to readers, because, well, we just don't have that data available. So, not what some people would consider the be-all, end-all, holy grail of comic book sales numbers, but, hey, we work with what we can get. And while it doesn't cover the totality of all comic book sales, most serious comic book fans, which is, I think, where the majority of comics are sold to, pick up their stuff in a shop serviced by Diamond. That's just, I think, the truth of the matter. Now, certainly not all of them, but, I mean, 75-80%-ish or more. Some titles that'll be way less, some titles that'll be, frankly, way more. So I think it's a good guiding force as to where the industry is going, what trends are out there. Certainly, again, there are exceptions to every generality you can make.
Again, when you and TJ are talking trades, it's a little different. But in single issues, how big is the newsstand market? Come on.
Well, I mean, how many are even on the newsstand to begin with, much less how big is it? And even if you factor in convention sales and some of that stuff, for the typical comic, if that's 20% of their sales, I think they're doing really well. Every once in a while, you'll hear some creator, and rightfully so, saying, well, my comic does really well in digital or in the Scholastic Book Fairs or in trade or in some other venue, which is awesome.
And again, most of that is not single issue sales.
Yes, most of that is indeed trades and such stuff. You know, and that if that helps keep the single issues around, that's awesome. But I think those are more the exceptions than the rule. And hey, if somebody can get a sale through some other channel, by all means, leverage it and go with it. I remember when the Left Behind stuff was coming out in I don't want to say graphic novel format, it was a prestige format. So it was a 64, maybe 80 pages, 5-issue series that I believe they would collect to trade or whatever. But that was selling gangbusters outside of Diamond through, you know, religious bookstores and things of that sort. To the point it was doing well over the 100,000 mark, even though I don't recall if it ever shut up more than maybe once on the Diamond charts, because that's not where that audience was.
But again, how many of those are there?
Just enough for people to mention them, but almost no more. I mean
Left Behind's been over a decade now, I would say.
Yes.
I remember that. And again, there hasn't really been a major example since.
Certainly none that come to my mind.
The obvious place it could happen is in the subscription boxes, but A, that seems to have calmed down quite a bit, and B, the last few years, we seem to see those.
Yeah, I think that there are, you know, every couple of years, some new thing will happen where something can hit big, but it tends not to be a very repeatable sort of a thing. You know, again, like you said, the Left Behind, I can't think of any other series that has kind of had that level of success outside of Diamond, at least that I'm aware of. There were a couple of things that hit big on the subscription boxes, but now, you know, some of that's not being included in the Diamond numbers because they're bulk purchases and they're not the same sort of thing as the regular sales. But even if they were included, there's not that many of those things happening that much.
And like I said, when they were happening, particularly with the major publishers, we did tend to see them. Go back last year or two, you know, there's episodes where we talked about them.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're at a point now where some of these subscription box services are shutting down. A fan block that was doing, among other things, the Doctor Who box that I was going to subscribe again to. I go to their website and it's, quote unquote, down for maintenance. And I believe they've gone bankrupt. So it's a tough market all the way around. But, you know, while there are exception cases, there aren't that many, and they are, by definition, exceptional cases. For my money, the numbers we're looking at, while they're not the totality of things, they are the clear direction the industry is heading in. And it's rare for any other channel, sales channel or whatever, to do so well for more than an item or two to be considered a guiding force. Now, certainly, if something is doing well digitally, that may give it a longer life through the, even if its sales through Diamond are not that great, or if it's doing gangbusters over its, the Scholastic Book Fairs or something, that for those few items or whatever will do it. But it's not like those have taken over as any sort of competitive or primary revenue streams by and large for everybody.
Well, and digital is an interesting one that at least in theory could make a difference. Scholastic, there's a weird line where those are almost illustrated children's books, and what's comics, what isn't, you can get into that. And again, that you're talking almost exclusively of trade stuff.
Yes.
Not monthly single issues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think, like I've said a few times, those of us that are really in love with this art form, this medium, we tend to know where our local comic shop is or how to subscribe to them online or what have you. We wind up buying them through the Diamond sales channel.
Yeah.
You know, so again, and to your point, that on the trade side, it's a very different beast because it's more viable to sell a trade or whatever at a bookstore or something like that versus a single issue, which comparatively is frankly overpriced. But, you know, that's one of those things where the $3.99 price point has hit acceptance even after 5-6 years of trying to get there and getting some pushback. I don't know how much more they can be raising prices before people are thinking, you know, I could actually have a nice meal for the cost of this comic.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, there's a whole bunch of, yes.
It's just comics in the single issue format are not price competitive compared to other forms of entertainment or ways of spending your money. And I think that's just inherently problematic.
Yes. And again, you know, we talk about it often. To me personally, a big piece of that is the storytelling style.
Oh, absolutely.
Because not only is it a $3.99 book, it's a $3.99 chapter. And not in the old serialized portion of a story. Very much in the chapter of a serialized portion of the story.
I was reading one comic where I got to the end and frankly I was shocked I'd already hit there because not that much had happened.
Yeah. There's no, you know, there very often isn't really a true beginning, middle, and end. There's resolution to no part of the storyline and many issues. Yeah.
The comic I was reading, and the definition of what a scene is, I'll admit, can be a little loose, you know, but the comic I read, in my mind, essentially had two scenes, and one of them was, it was the Hawkeye thing that Drew and I just reviewed, actually, you know, dealing with what was happening with what appeared to be Kate, and then cut to what was really happening with Kate. And you could argue, okay, they had a scene transition here or there in terms of they moved locales or whatever, but the story was flowing seamlessly. So depending how you count it, if you're really, you know, strict about it, okay, maybe that first, what I'm considering one scene was three or something, but the bottom line is not a whole lot happened. And that was just frustrating.
Well, and again, it's not how much happens or how many scenes, you know, we've all seen very good one act plays. But these aren't one act plays. These are one scene from a six-act play,
yeah,
which is not the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to, is there a satisfying chunk of story or not? And on the comics side, I think it's often comics don't come out ahead on that. Some do marvelous. Some, it's like, wow, a lot happened. I got a full, good story here. Others, it's clear they're serializing not even an epic story, but a story over, you know, six issues or what have you. But I think that's part of why trade readers and digital readers tend to have a little bit of a different reading experience and therefore sales dynamic, because they can either get the whole story in once or whatever. I think it's funny because the trade, when it came about as a ubiquitous thing, because, I mean, I've been reading comics since long before the trade paperback was really even conceived. I mean, before the days of a miniseries or anything of the sort. And each comic had to stand on its own, because it was the newsstand days. You weren't guaranteed to get the one before or after, just through availability. And when the trade became ubiquitous and they realized, well, you know, we can have this 6-issue arc and people can read that and enjoy a bigger story. Let's write for that. That led to some decompression, that led to some of the storytelling problems, and I think as a direct result, lower sales on the individual issue side. But now what we're seeing is on the digital side, because they're in even smaller increments, you know, where 2 or 3 of these get collected into a single print issue, then 6 of those into a trade, they have to at least have a good story beat every, you know, half issue, every third of an issue or something. So there's competing storytelling styles that are still getting worked out these days.
And I don't read a lot of them, but I read Injustice, most of it digitally in the installments. Those felt like installments of a serialized story.
Mm-hmm.
Again, many other books I read today don't feel like installments of a serialized story. They feel like pieces of an installment.
Right. And the key difference there is the piece feels incomplete, where the installment, while it is not the totality of the story, is satisfying in and of itself to some degree.
Exactly.
Yeah. It to some people, it may seem like semantics or something, but I think the reading experience between an installment and a piece is substantial.
No, it's huge.
And I think a lot of people are getting frustrated with that storytelling style in differing ways, in so much as like an event thing. If it feels like they've padded part of it and it's more parts than it needed to be, people are unsatisfied with that and they rebel, and it hurts sales. And if a publisher or creator does this enough, they get a bad rap for that. And that's a barrier to entry that, you know, is an increasingly high threshold they've got to get by to get people in on a new title or story. So yeah,
and on the Slack channel, actually, I mean, literally within the last hour or so as we record this, Eric and I were having a discussion where he made a suggestion of a book to me, which, you know, sounds interesting enough, and I may check out a trade of it. But I think I made a comment that I kind of made almost to myself. It's on the Slack channel. It's under a reply, so maybe everybody didn't notice it. And again, it may not be popular to say on a comic book podcast. I don't know if I am particularly a lover of comic books. I love, or the medium. There are certain characters and certain types of stories I think are done very well through comics.
Mm-hmm.
There are others that, while they can be done through comics, and they can even be done well through comics, I may prefer, you know, a television show, a movie, a prose novel. And part of what I got out of comics for many years that you couldn't get anyplace else were the superheroes and serialized storytelling. Now that there is superheroes other places and serialized storytelling is really dead in the medium, it's, and again, not that I don't still read and I don't still have characters and things I love, but going, oh, we'll just try this out. You know, I don't want a detective story in a comic book. I read mystery novels. I read lots of them. That's how I get my enjoyment from them. And again, I think comics have lost, at least to me, part of what made them unique.
I see where you're coming from, and I agree with a lot of that, in so much as certain types of stories I gravitate to in certain mediums over others. And the whole serialized narrative, to me, while that's been a hallmark of comics in the past, is not one that it's like, oh, I just love the never-ending saga sort of a thing inherently. It's, yeah, there are pros and cons to it. I don't love it or hate it. For me, certain stories make almost have a more natural fit in one medium versus another. I love reading science fiction novels where they can get into the ideas, play around with the, you know, what the characters are thinking, how they led to this, how they solved the problem, whatever. A novel is a great place for that sort of a thing. Whereas reading a Batman novel, and I've read a few and by some very good authors, it lacks the visuals, which is a key aspect of superheroes.
Absolutely.
The cape, the costume, the fight scene, etc. To your point, though, we're now getting that in movies and television shows, and it's exceedingly well done. And there are aspects where, you know, it's like, hey, I kind of prefer it there in some cases, because it's got the movement, it's got the sound, it's got the effects and whatnot. But there are also other places. A mystery novel is a good example where, you know, I can get that in almost any medium. And while I would say most mystery stories I would probably consume more on TV just because I'm comfortable with that format and stuff. I've certainly read some of them in novels and they work really well. I tend not to have the long attention span and the capacity for retaining all the details needed to sit through a 300-page mystery novel and retain all of it for the pieces to fit together. I'm more the roller coaster writer of those sorts of stories, I guess. But there's also a case where, while there's not a particular need to do that in comic book form, I could see a particular type of mystery story where, you know, you've got, say, that double-page splash of the crime scene. And if you've got the right writer and the right artist, and they're showing you everything there as if you are the detective, that's something I could see being very much more effective in a comic book format than a prose novel or even on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are certainly ways to do it right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or better, I wouldn't say right and wrong. There are ways that are more effective for individual readers than others.
Yeah.
But I guess what I have found personally is as people write for the trade, the single issues become less interesting, let's say.
Yes.
So then when you read the trade, you go, okay, well, now you've essentially got a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them work very well that way, particularly the things that I am used to in comics. Superheroes, those big, expansive, shared universes, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, particularly people go, oh, why don't you read much from the back half, the independents, that kind of stuff. Well, when you simply serialize out a short story, the answer becomes, well, it reads better in a trade. And then when I... again, personally, read some of those trades, the answer becomes, well, this would have been better as a prose short story or novella. And again, it's not that I dislike, but my love of comics is not based largely around the medium. It's kind of based around the stories that are being told. And right now, the stories being told maybe aren't best in that medium for my consumption.
Well, and I think the sales levels we see these days are fundamentally different than the sales levels that were, you know, around when I was a kid, when, you know, when stuff that's a top seller today might have been cut for low sales back then.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what they say, but I think they may have been talking more print run. But anyways, at that point in the late 70s, early 80s, you had three TV channels. There weren't as many movies coming out, I believe, as there are now. Maybe I'm wrong about that, though. But there was fewer novels. There were fewer stories to consume elsewhere.
Yeah.
Whereas now, every time you turn around, there's about 50 zillion sorts of stories of some sort or another, or narratives to follow.
And they weren't, prose novels, again, I am a big reader, were not as ubiquitous or as fundamentally economical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've gone through three or four e-readers in the last 10 years. They're fine. I still find, personally, my love is still the pocket paperback, or the mass market paperback, as they call it now.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point, most of those on Amazon are $4 to $6. I can get a 400-page novel for the cost of a 32-page comic book.
Yep.
And when you realize the story is the same of what might be in a trade, now that's a $4 or $5 novel competing against the $19.99 trade.
I would argue the typical novel is maybe twice as dense as a trade of equivalent. It will, because the trades are going to be closer to 128 pages or something. But it's funny because the price point, the return on the investment, all of that is something that are competing sales factors, not just between comics, but comics and other mediums.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if we were to compare this month's sales to a year ago, we were at pretty much, you know, around record highs, if not actual record highs. I forget if it was August or which month it was that had the top sales last year. But, you know, we're around a little over 6.5 million, almost 6.6 million in total sales for the top 300 comics. Comics as a medium are, I think, having a hard time proving out their competitiveness against other forms of art and story. And there are times when comics do really well, other times where it kind of not so much.
And again, I don't think all of that is... mediums have to know what they do best. And I very often feel like the comic book medium has forgotten what it does best sometimes.
Absolutely. I think at times it's definitely not playing to its strengths.
Yeah.
And I think It's funny because I'm seeing a lot more of a back to basics sort of approach in some respects from Marvel and DC right now with Rebirth, with Legacy. But I don't know that they've truly hooked in on what it is that historically we comic book readers have gravitated to comics for versus, oh, we just need to pull back in the old continuity or we need to go back to the old numbering.
Yeah.
Shall we actually look at some of the numbers?
Well, you wanted to look at the breakdown. We didn't actually discuss any of the breakdown.
Well, that's where I was going to start, but yeah.
Fair enough.
Of that almost 6.6 million units, almost 3 million of it went to Marvel. Marvel had 45.33% of the units. DC had 35.91% of the units, and Image had 8.18% of the units. That works out to a little below 3 million units for Marvel, a little above, between 2.3, 2.4 million for DC, and over half a million for Image. That right there accounts for what? Almost
89.4.
Yeah, I was going to say almost 90% of the total sales for the top 300. Yeah. IDW did well with 2.6, and by there's some people say, how can you say it did well? It's nowhere near 3 million. It's like, yeah, it's not. But IDW's not playing at the same scale that Marvel and DC are. You know? For anyone other than Marvel and DC and Image, doing in the hundreds of thousands of units in the top 300 is good.
Absolutely.
You know, for anyone other than Image, IDW, Dynamite, Dark Horse, maybe Boom, Valiant, and Titan stuff, when you start getting into the over 50, 60,000, you're doing pretty well. Because a lot of these are smaller publishers. They've got less output or more niche output. And again, there's nothing right or wrong about that. I think some of these creators are doing just a stellar job of keeping their audience happy, even if they've only got one book and it's doing 12, 13,000 units. Benitez Productions, I talked about that a month or two back. And that's another one where you've got, I think it's Lady Mechanica, one title. And if your audience is happy with it, and frankly, that book is selling on par or better than some Marvel and DC books, you're doing something right.
And again, not selling as well, but Abstract Studios has basically published a book at a time for decades.
Yeah.
And I mean, Terry Moore does very well and has a very loyal audience for what he does.
Yeah. Captain of his own destiny. You've gotta appreciate that. Beyond that, I don't think there's too much exciting in the breakdown and such. If we hop over to the top comics, we've got a little bit of interesting stuff here at the top. Dark Knight's Metal topped the list with 261,997 units. So well over the 250,000 unit mark. That is, one, it's excellent, great, they did a terrific job. Yes, there were some variants, there were some alternate covers, let me be clear on that. And the distinction I make between alternate and variants tend to have ratios or other gimmicky, you know, behavior-driven sort of things. The covers on Dark Knight's Metal number one were true variants where I believe they were all open to order. You know, hey, you want to get some of the, there's no minimum, just buy what you want of the Andy Kubert or Jim Lee or John Romita Jr. versions. And I like that. I don't need all those covers personally, but if they're going to do it, I'd rather they go that route where the retailers can pick and choose what they want to order and stuff versus being required to get, you know, 25 or 50 or 500 or 2,000 or something of a given cover to go get the one that they really want. So DC seems to have very much stepped away from incentive variants and gimmicks and stuff like that. They have alternate covers, but they're open to order, and I'm not going to fault them for that at all.
Yeah, I actually think rank 2, 3, and 4 are interesting. Dark Knight Metal, no doubt, I think did better than I expected. I don't know about you.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm curious where it's going to land on the second issue.
Yeah.
Because that's unsustainable.
Absolutely, but I didn't expect that number one to be there either.
Where did you think it would go? I thought there was a good chance it could top the list. Not by as high as it did.
If you would have asked me, I would have said between 90 and 110,000.
Okay, and I would have thought that was reasonable. I thought it would have done a little better than that. I thought it would have topped out above Batman, but not at like two and a half times Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and the fact that it's doing it on open to order variants or alternates or whatever versus, you know, incentive ones like Marvel tends to do, There will clearly be a drop on the second issue and probably a substantial one, but I think it stands a good chance of staying above the 100,000 mark, hopefully through the entire six-issue run.
And it was an outstanding issue. Mm-hmm. At least I enjoyed it.
Had some great stuff. Batman continues to do well. The two issues there, it's still the top ongoing title out there. Number 28 did 104,666 units. 29 stayed over the 100,000 mark with 100,787 units, meaning it's very likely that number 30 will drop below the 100,000 mark.
Yeah, but we've said that a few times, and it even has dropped below 100,000 a few times in this run, but it has found ways to come back. That issue 28 we just discussed is up 2,300 units from issue 27.
True. And again, whether it drops below 100,000 or not, that's an arbitrary benchmark. It's a nice round number to use as a benchmark. But it is clearly the number one ongoing title with, I don't think, any serious danger of getting overtaken by anything for at least another couple of months or whatever, because it's going to take I'm not going to consider another title to have beaten it unless it's one ongoing and two has at least three issues out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, the next title below it, Secret Empire.
The interesting one.
We got three issues of it, 8, 9, and 10, and 10 outsold 8 and 9, which is not too surprising to me. It's not unusual for the final issue of an event series to get a little bit of a sales bump from the people who just want to see how it ends. They don't want to be there for the whole ride, but that's the important part. And that may have been what happened here.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with any of that. I do think the fact that Marvel's big summer event finished below just your next couple of regular issues of Batman is a bit shocking, and I would say somewhat alarming if you're Marvel.
The series ended with number 10 at 86,123 units, but number 9 got to 77,072 units. So it's not just that it ended below Batman, but fairly noticeably below Batman. If I were Marvel, I would not be overjoyed about this. I'm not sure I'd be panicking either, but I think part of the mistake that Marvel may have made is Secret Empire was essentially set up by the previous event or quasi-event, whatever you want to call it, of Assault on Pleasant Hill, and Secret Empire launches the next event. Now, before, there was at least a many, many month gap where they had some bridge titles like Thunderbolts and Captain America Sam Wilson and stuff and the Captain America Steve Rogers, of course, to set up Secret Empire. Secret Empire itself launches or kicks off, although somewhat retroactively so, annoyingly, the Generations one-shots, and we've got a couple of those on the list, that are leading into the Marvel Legacy one-shot event, branding, whatever it turns out to be. And I'll be honest, determining if something is an event title or not has gotten ridiculously crazy. There was a discussion on the Slack channel where I was commenting how I didn't really consider Venomverse to be one, and then Eric's like, well, it's going to cross over into this, into this, into this, and I'm like, well, that fits my definition of an event, so I guess I just hadn't been paying attention, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But like Spider-Man 2, I would not consider an event. But it's part of it is events come fast and furious and far too frequently. And I think Marvel's gone to that well too many times, too frequently. That's part of why this didn't do well. And when the crux of the story is to take I was going to say a beloved hero of Captain America. You could argue whether he's really beloved or not, and I don't want to get into that. I love the character. But I could see where some find him boring, old-fashioned, whatever. But he is the hero's hero in the Marvel Universe, or at least he was up until what led up to the storyline. So I think a lot of people were kind of rebelling of you've done what to Steve Rogers? And a 10-issue series that was so well-planned that it was going to be done in 9, except it needed more time and stuff. It just, this had all of the the mockable aspects of a Marvel event. It'll run late, it'll have extra issues, it'll do this, it'll do that.
And while I don't think it technically did it this time, one of the things that, and again, we had some part of this discussion on the Slack channel today, that has turned me off to Marvel and Marvel events is the events themselves are being undercut by the next event.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we weren't issue or two into Secret Empire before everything was about Legacy.
Yep.
So, okay, now at this point, the entire rest of that event's essentially a lame duck. And while this time it didn't happen very well, sort of, you can depending on the Venom and some of the others, the last few times this has happened, not only has the event been beat out in the buzz by the new relaunch, in many cases, those relaunch books are two or three issues in before the final event book even came out.
Now, in some cases, like Secret Wars, that was blatantly obvious it had happened. With Secret Empire, it was not blatantly obvious that things happening after the end of the event had already been released, but that was the case.
Okay. And again, as someone who stopped reading after a few of these, namely Original Sin and Secret Empire, or I'm sorry, Secret Wars, I was unaware of that. I know most of the Legacy books are now Chet.
To me, it's not even the Legacy stuff, it's the Generation stuff.
Okay.
There is a connection between Secret Empire and Generations. And I don't want to, you know, spoil it or anything for anybody, but it's one of those things that I was reading the Generation stuff. It's like, I don't know what's going on here, but okay, it's not a bad story. And then I hit something in Secret Empire. It's, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
And cart before the horse sort of thing's a little annoying to me. Yeah. But the Generation stuff is just all over the map. The Wolverine and all-new Wolverine one did well at 85,688 units. Some of the others not as well. Hawkeye was down at about the 45,000 units. But this was one of those things where, you know, my hat is off to the mathematical skills expected out of the retailer community, because they got some discounts on, like, that Wolverine, all-new Wolverine's issue of Generations, depending how much they ordered of that versus Secret Empire and a few other things. You know, if they ordered 100% of what they ordered of Secret Empire number 5, they'd get this kind of a discount. If they ordered 125, they'd get this sort. If they ordered 150, they'd get, you know, and it's like the mathematical crap they've got to do just to get an extra 5, 10, or 15% discount. If I were a publisher, I would make things easier on the retailers. And I wouldn't be tying the success of one thing into the success of another, because at some point I'm going to go chase back. Well, okay, did Secret Empire 5 have something they had to do better then? And did that have something they had to do better then? And see if I can get a kind of, have there been daisy chains of this sort of a thing? Because I'm pretty sure there have been.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be surprising in the least. And at that point, it almost becomes like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
It has to run out at some point. You can keep saying, hey, we'll give you an extra discount if you go 5% higher. And if you go 5% higher than that, we'll give you another discount. If you go 5% higher than that, we'll give you another discount. And there's some point, if sales don't actually go up, mm-hmm. which they may or may not, that extra discount isn't worth it. Yeah, you can get half off, but you got to order 10 times more than you need.
Yeah.
At that point, the discount's not that helpful anymore.
It gets to a point where it's simply not sustainable.
Yeah.
Generations Unworthy Thor, Mighty Thor, it did 76,400 units. Star Wars 34 and 35 round out the top 10 at, 34 did 66,628, 35 did 65,943 units. So by the time you're out of the top 10, you're below 66,000, not by much, but by a little. And then right there at rank number 11 is Walking Dead, which is 65,855 units. So it's less than 100 units below Star Wars. So I think it's got good odds, maybe not next month, but soonish, of overtaking Star Wars in terms of which is the better-selling ongoing title. Meaning Walking Dead at that point would be the second-best ongoing title in comics behind Batman, and noticeably which, behind Batman.
Which it has been a number of times in the last couple of years.
I think Star Wars has always been above it, so I don't think it's been the second best. I think it's usually
Since Star Wars started, that's true. Star Wars has had a few low points, though. There were times Amazing Spider-Man was in there. There were a few other books but Walking Dead has been in second or very close to second for a long time.
I was thinking it had not gotten to second point, but it had gotten to third behind other titles like Harley and a few others. And what that other title was has certainly rotated in and out over time.
Absolutely.
But I think it's at the point where if it can overtake Star Wars, and I believe there's a change in creative team happening for Star Wars soon, which gives Walking Dead a definite opening, that it could not only surpass it, but get a lock in that position.
And again, all this assumes Legacy doesn't, you know, put Spider-Man or the Avengers or one of those back up there.
True, true. But all I'm saying with the Legacy stuff, and granted I haven't done a deep dive on this, is it's a change of issue numbers, not really a change in creators' tone, direction, or anything of the sort.
Yeah, no, and that seems to be the case.
But it just takes one title to buck that trend, do something great, and shoot up the charts.
Yeah.
We've certainly seen it. Just not sure we're going to see it this time. Willing to be proved wrong.
Yep.
But what's interesting is out of this top 10, Dark Knight Metal is a mini-series. Batman is a sustaining, you know, high-selling, you know, top-selling title. Okay, good. Secret Empire just ended, or will with the Omega issue or whatever other adjunct issue it's got. The Generation issues are one-shots each. So really, the only ongoing titles we have in the top 10 are Batman and Star Wars.
Well, and there's multiple issues of both, and to be fair, the other ones above it, there's essentially multiple issues as well. Metal is only one, but there's three Secret Empires issues, and if you consider Generations in and of itself an event, there's two of those, there's two Star Wars. I mean, the top 10 is really comprised of four or five titles.
Let's talk about if Generations is an event or not. I can go either way on that. To me, it's not a typical event. I define an event as something that really touches on everybody. This is basically nearly a dozen one-shots. It touches a lot of characters, but it's not like everybody in your dog has one. What's interesting, though, is Generation a series of one-shots, or is it a series that just happens to have all number one issues?
Yeah.
And that, and again, some people are going to think this is just semantics, and arguably it is, but there comes a point where if you don't spend a little time on semantics and on definitions, you cannot clearly communicate and you cannot corral the data at hand. Now, one of the problems, or not problems, but one of the things that had been annoying me with the way I've been categorizing titles of new and defunct and so forth, is you'd get things like these Generations, they'd show up as new and be a big influx there, and then they'd all show up as defunct next time, but they're one-shots. They're not gonna continue. So I got clever this time around and said, you know what? Things like Dark Days, the casting and the Forge and stuff like that, they're not part of a series. Now, some of the data I have includes a series code for each item. It's either a zero, because it's not part of a series, or it is a unique number assigned to that run of that title. So I said, well, anything that's got that zero, let's pull that out and treat that as a non-series category. So I added that this time around. And what was interesting was what did and didn't fall into that. The Generations one-shots did not. They're each getting assigned their own series code for some reason. And I'm not saying it's necessarily right or wrong. I'm just saying I was surprised by that because they're one-shots. There's not going to be a Generations Wolverine and all-new Wolverine 2. At least I'm not thinking there's going to be. Maybe I'm wrong on that. There's been no word of it as far as I'm aware. But things like the True Believers Kirby 100th issues and one-shots, those had a zero series code, so they fell into the non-series. The various, like, Black Racer and Shiloh Norman, Darkseid, Manhunter, New Gods, all those specials, DC's Kirby stuff, those had a zero series code, so they fell into this new category. As expected and desired, the Dark Days, the Casting, and the Forge fell into this category. But another one that fell into this that really surprised me, but it kind of sort of almost but not quite makes sense, is Captain America. If you go down to rank, where did Captain America land this time around? Rank 42. We've got Captain America 25. Now, note that I'm not suffixing it with either Sam Wilson or Steve Rogers. Those titles ended.
I noticed there's no 24 that it's comparing to.
Well, because this series of Captain America had no 24, Sam Wilson, Captain America, or Captain America Sam Wilson, it did have a 24 that this kind of sort of replaced.
Okay.
Which is kind of confusing because there's also a Steve Rogers one, but okay, fine. With the next issue of Captain America, they jump to the legacy numbering. So there isn't going to be a Captain America 26. It'll be, oh shoot, what will that be? That'll be like 625 or something, I think it is.
Whatever it is, okay.
695, I believe it is. Yeah, 695. So since this is essentially a one-shot, they said, well, let's not give it a series code. Which makes sense up until the point that the Generations that are explicitly one-shots did. So there was a point when I was making changes to my number crunching on certain beliefs as to how the series code worked, and it not quite working the way I had originally thought, that caused me a little bit of consternation as I was making those changes. But it does pull out things like the Batman 66 meets the Legion of Superheroes and some other things like that that are very much kind of, a non-repeating item or sale. Because I want the new titles to reflect new ongoing titles. Things that are, in theory, if sales stabilized, new titles would add, defunct titles would subtract, everything else, in theory, if it was perfectly homogenous from month to month, would, of course, it is absolutely not. Everything else would kind of, you know, come out in the wash and be even. Now, what I found interesting is, I mean, by definition of certain of these categories, we've got a little bit of a look as to what the September numbers could be like. Because we're at a little under 6.6 million here for the top 300 for August. Now, on some crazy assumptions that these titles continue all to next month, which we know is not going to be the case. By definition, the non-series category starts September with a downswing equivalent to the size of this category. These are non-repeating sales.
Yeah, but that's always been true. And we've always discovered previously the how good the month is essentially based on how well the number ones did.
Absolutely.
And so you're saying we're going to lose some number ones, we're going to get different number ones, and with legacy numbering, they won't actually be number ones, but you get the point.
Sales-wise, they'll work that way. But what I'm saying is going into September, we've already, in theory, lost 1.1 million units. September is in a hole that it has to climb out of. August had 5 Wednesdays versus September having 4. Now, I'm not saying September's going to suck sales-wise. I'm just saying this is why they need to have those number ones. This is why they keep doing that. It's a churn-based model where they already know they've lost certain sales that aren't going to repeat. You know, they're not, Marvel's not getting the Secret Empire sales next month other than the one for Omega or whatever. They've put themselves in a position where they have to keep doing these new number ones and these sales stunts just to recoup what they've already lost.
Yeah.
That's a bad situation to be in. And the other thing I was really noticing this time around was a lot of what's happening in the suspended and returning categories tends to be Marvel books.
Really?
Not exclusively.
I would have thought it would have been all those indie books that kind of take scheduled breaks.
There's some of those too, but in terms of the stuff higher in the list, it tends to be more Marvel.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where if I were a retailer, I would want to you know, okay, they shipped another issue more this time than last month for Secret Empire, for Star Wars, for Jean Grey, for Black Panther and the crew and stuff. They shipped, though, fewer of Deadpool, Weapon X, Star Wars Dr. Aphra, Daredevil, Secret Empire, Brave New World. What this means is the Marvel sales are less predictable, less reliable for the retailers.
Are they less predictable, less reliable, or are they just less based on what we arbitrarily call months?
Okay, that's a fair point.
Like, if a book comes out every 3 weeks, if it reliably comes out every 3 weeks, it will naturally have this kind of month-to-month thing, but that doesn't mean it's not reliable. It's only unreliable because of where we drew the lines.
Fair enough, fair enough. In this case, some of it's definitely where the month falls versus where the issues land. In other cases, it is delays and other oddities in the shipping schedule that were, I don't think, foreseen.
But most of those books you're talking about are traditional ongoing books that are still continuing. So you're either talking about a delay or, again, a book that comes out 18 times a year. And you're hitting one of the once-a-month months versus one of the twice-a-month months.
I guess it comes down to how do the retailers tend to, if they even bother budgeting for the year, how do they do that? Do they do it on a week-to-week basis with that flux? Do they do it on a month-to-month where they've got to pay the rent and so forth or not? And certainly there's a little bit of wiggle room because of 5-week versus 4-week months. But the arbitrariness of the month boundaries impacts DC as much as Marvel, yet we're not seeing a major fluctuation in the number of issues DC's releasing of these titles from month to month.
But DC seems to have very clearly gone with twice a month or once a month.
Yes.
Whereas Marvel seems to go more in this in-between 18 in a year, 19 in a year, which, again, doesn't fit as nicely into those month constraints.
Again, it's more every 3 weeks-ish.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying it's necessarily right or wrong, but it does cause the month-to-month total of the top 300 to fluctuate quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when you've got some high-profile delays periodically that tend to be more at Marvel than DC, I could see where retailers, in theory, could be a little frustrated with that.
Absolutely. And as you said, the months, while they are, in the grand scheme of things, arbitrary, as you pointed out, rents tend to be due on a certain day of the month every month. So they aren't arbitrary in one sense that, you know, everyone uses
them. Mm-hmm.
So it is odd, again, for someone budgeting, etc. They seem a little arbitrary when you kind of talk higher level. But again, in that nuts and bolts day to day, you got to make that rent payment on the first of every month. That month isn't very arbitrary.
Well, and even if the months are arbitrary, they're highly predictable.
Yes.
So, again, it's to me when I'm looking at these charts and I'm seeing red, because that's what I'm using for Marvel, versus blue that I'm using for DC or whatever, you know, it tends to jump out at me, you know. And I'm not saying necessarily, again, a good or a bad thing. It's just the publishers are operating differently. To your point, DC's sticking to either straight monthly or twice a month. Marvel is doing, again, every 3 weeks or that sort of a 18 in a year cadence. Both are perfectly viable approaches. They just have very different ramifications as to how the numbers look on a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but I think Marvel is also doing a bit more kind of gaming of the system or whatever. If you look at rank 107,
okay,
we've got a jump on Ultimates number 2. It's up about 31.5%. And this is another one that's just kind of weird because this is a legacy numbering, which for most legacy numbering, they're giving it a new series code, which my system will show as the one volume ending and a new volume starting, yet they didn't do that here on the final issue of Ultimates 2, because, well, it's the final issue. Why bother? You know, there's a lack of consistency, or maybe I just don't fully understand the rules for how they are assigning a new series code and when, to where it just appears to be a little inconsistent from title to title sometimes.
I was going to ask you something, and I'm not reading this book, so maybe that's why I don't know. Because of this, I sorted by largest increase. Do you know what happened at rank 81?
Rank 81 was Supergirl, and that is the first part of the Emerald Eradication storyline where the Emerald Empress has her new Fatal Five assembling. It is Steve Orlando is the writer, Robson Rocha and Daniel Hendricks on the art and cover. I don't know if that's a new creative team or not. I'm thinking it's not, but I could be wrong on that. Let me see if there were cover. Well, this is DC. There may have been multiple covers, but they're unlikely to have been. Yeah, Supergirl 12 had two covers, and there's no minimum purchase to order that other one.
Okay.
So there may have been a little bit of a bump because, you know, hey, the Fatal Five is Legion type stuff. Not that these are actual Legion characters other than the Emerald Empress, but those of us starved for Legion stuff may have flocked to this. Other than that, I really cannot explain a 27% increase in sales.
Okay.
That seems too high for, you know, just the Emerald Empress showing up yet again and teasing that we may get some Legion stuff, because it's almost certainly just a tease.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to say jumps out to me,
mm-hmm.
And in some ways more DC than Marvel, but not really, because Marvel it applies to just even lower. If you go below 50,000, which this month occurs right between ranks 25 and 26.
Yep.
There's a lot of books in here. And again, maybe it's just expectations versus it was always kind of true. That I am somewhat surprised are below 50,000. We're talking Superman. We're talking X-Men Gold. We're talking Wonder Woman. We're talking Peter Parker and the Spectacular Spider-Man. We're talking Old Man Logan. Action Comics. Captain America, the one we've already discussed.
Which one of these surprises you the most? And let's drill in on one of them.
None more than okay. So these are the ones I just listed are frontline, arguably A-list characters for the big two.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All struggling to get to 50,000. And in some cases, you start getting down, you know, Harley Quinn, which was a top 10 book not that long ago at rank 50 and 44. Mighty Thor, Weapon X.
If we talk one or two at a time, I can do some charting and we can talk specifically.
Harley Quinn.
Okay.
Harley Quinn. Because like I said, that was a book a year ago we were talking about, wow, DC really has something. This is a consistent top 10 to 15 book.
All right, give me just a sec to throw together a quick chart so I can look at the last couple of volumes and stuff.
And they were even, you know, at that point, remember they were doing those one-shots kind of every other month to get an extra one in before they started doing twice a month. And
all right, so right now it is at 37,000-ish.
Yes.
It's been doing a slow decline to get to that point since... I'm going to say since a beginning of fourth quarter 2016.
Yeah.
At which point it was at about 63,000 and it's just been kind of slowly eradicating.
Yeah.
Prior to that, this volume had started crazy high with, let's see, according to this, some of this may have been real reactivity too, but, you know, just crazy, crazy astronomical numbers before dropping from like the numbers I have here are 366,000 plus on the first thing, and then 116,000, then 81,006, and then 73,000, and then we get to about where I was talking about. But that main run of that 60 to 33,000, to the 30,000, 40,000 ish, we'll say 40 to 60,000 range, is a little bit worse than how the previous volume had been doing. It had been more, actually, it's about the same. That previous volume had ended around 45,000, had gotten down as low as 44,000, and it spent a lot of its run more at the 70,000 stuff.
But again, 70,000 is a long way from 35.
That's true.
We're talking top 10 instead of 50.
Let's go back a little further then to the previous volume.
Well, and we discussed that at the time.
It was more in the 15,000 range. So yes. The question is, how much of this is the character? How much of it is the creators on the character at the time? So I think this one, if you exclude the first half dozen issues or whatever of the current series that were just outliers, it's really doing more or less how the previous volume had done.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. But again, like I said, it was a year ago we were discussing this as, hey, can this thing really stay in the top 10 for a long time?
And I think it did up until they changed creators. What other one do you want to talk about?
I mean, any of these. That was a DC, let's pick on a Marvel book. Old Man Logan at rank 37, selling 41,200, essentially.
All right, we've got two volumes of this, both of which started strong. The 2015 volume started above 122,000, quickly dropped below 80,000, and then kind of finished off around a little under 63,000. I believe that was the one that was part of the Secret War stuff. The next volume, this volume started at 104,000. Fell to 64,000, and then it's more or less continuing kind of the same trajectory the previous volume had established.
Yep.
You know, over a year or two, you lose 10, 20,000 units.
Yeah.
So.
But again, we're talking about a book that was consistently in the top 20, now not.
Fair enough. I'd have to go double check the rankings on, the quantity rankings on the previous issues of that to validate it was definitely in the top 20. I don't recall off the top of my head. But it's one of those things that, yeah, stuff cools off, and two things determine if it's in the top 20. One, how it sells, and two, how everything else sells. And we're at a point where right now, you know, we've got, between Dark Knight Metal, three issues of Secret Empires, one, two, three, four, Generations one shots are above this, at least four, maybe five. That pushes it down another 10 ranks.
Okay, but again, it's not just ranks. Again, we were talking about books that were hovering in the 60, 70,000 range that are now below 50,000.
That one was never hovering in the 70,000 range. The previous volume a little bit. Most of this since the third issue has been below 60,000.
Okay. And again, maybe it's just comic, you know, even A-list characters other than Batman don't sell as well as you would think.
Well, no, and to me, that's the thing, is most books are, you could, if you had asked me when I was first starting to do the podcasting about this stuff, how I would kind of, you know, what's an A-list book, a B-list book, that kind of a thing, anything above 100,000, we'd get an A, anything above the 200,000, probably an A+, you know what I mean, it's top of the top, kind of, but not sustainable, repeatable, not, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I would have said there were a lot more books back then in that 50 to 70,000 range. That's really thinned out. And again, I'd have to go double check the numbers and the histograms and stuff to see if that's just my memory playing tricks on me, or if that's indeed how it was. But we get down to 40,000 and so forth really quickly most months. Certainly lately.
Yeah. Like I said, we're at 40,000 by rank 43.
Yeah.
Heck, we're at 30,000 by rank 75.
Yeah, and Green Lanterns. This is, and Hal Jordan Green Lantern Corps is above that by, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 units.
Yeah, it's in the 31,000s.
This is one of the franchises that at the start of the New 52 was so good, it didn't really need to change much. But that's the difference of, do you have Geoff Johns on the book or do you not?
See, I disagree. I don't think it's just Geoff Johns. Geoff Johns certainly helped.
I'm not saying it's exclusively him. I'm just saying his leadership of that franchise kept it going really well. And I'm not seeing much between Sam Humphries and Robert Venditti. And they're both not bad writers. They're good, but they're not Geoff Johns.
Yes. And that, the slide had already started, but a lot of the real on the Green Lanterns to me started at the beginning of the New 52. When the core book became the Sinestro book. It wasn't Green Lantern anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And with Rebirth, they made it, again, no particular insult to the characters, but the main Green Lantern book is the two Johnny Come Latelys on the block.
Well, what gets me with these titles is they're simultaneously and almost inexplicably both all over the place and almost single-mindedly focused.
Yeah.
Because with Green Lanterns, plural, the two rookies, are they on Earth? Are they in space? Where are they? It's like, make up your mind. Yet they're following the storyline of the first Lantern or whatever just incessantly. It's like, come on, move on to some other storyline.
Yeah.
And it's almost like variations on a theme here. Whereas Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps tends to be more of, are they fighting the Yellow Lanterns or the Red Lanterns or both or whatever? And it's like, kind of come on and just move on. And it's funny because historically you would have a franchise with multiple titles here, two titles. One would do so much, the other would do, I don't know, half or a third or two thirds or whatever, decidedly less. These two titles are kind of neck and neck right now and have been for most of the run. So there is no clear front runner in terms of which is the franchise flagship. Whereas previously it was clearly Green Lantern, the other, ongoing titles or whatever, which were,
it was Core
and, New Guardians.
Yep.
And this is where just the rotating titles drive me nuts. It's hard for me to keep track of, well, what was which title when.
Well, and I think part of what we're talking about is that switch. Green Lantern was the flagship book. It was also the Hal book for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And Core was the second book with Kyle and John and some of the others.
But when you toss Hal with the Core and the rookies into their own book, it's confusing as to which is the flagship.
Well, exactly. I think it's confusing readers. I think it's confusing sales. It's the How book is by definition almost core is the second tier book, but it's the main character we want versus the flagship book's got who are these people leads to confusion and sales like this.
What's funny though is when those other titles ended, or at least where they stop on my chart, I assume it's where they ended. New Guardians was down to around 20,000. Green Lantern Corps around 30,000. Sinestro around 15,000. Green Lantern around 33,000 when it kind of ended for the Rebirth stuff.
Yep.
So where these titles are now is
about where those top two were.
Where that top one was. Two, you're right, yeah. Back then.
Yeah.
And a little bit worse off than when the previous go-round had stopped right before, Flashpoint and New 52.
Yeah.
Because those titles were, what were those titles? The Green Lantern title of the time, Green Lantern Corps, and Emerald Warriors. So the lack of a clear franchise leader right now with the Green Lantern stuff is kind of unusual, at least historically speaking. Although it's funny because for quite a bit of the run, Green Lantern Corps and New Guardians were neck and neck. So the other run, I mean, it comes down to what they've essentially done by rejiggering the titles the way they did is sink a flagship.
Yes.
You've just got the two other runs now.
Yes.
So, I mean, certainly these things are not doing what we would like them to do, but the simple fact of the matter is most titles start really well, lose at least half their sales in short order, and then just decline from there. Whoever can figure out how to keep readers wins. It's I don't say it's that simple, because it's not easy to keep readers.
Batman's done it. How is it just that character is that unique? And as a big Batman fan, there's a part of me that almost wants to say yes, but on the other hand, it's like, really, no other superhero can come close?
You know, it's a good question, because I don't know. I mean, certainly some of it is Batman is Batman is Batman. You know, he is fundamentally a bit different than a lot of these other characters in terms of popularity, sales appeal, etc.
Yeah.
But
not that fundamentally different than, say, Tony Stark, other than in possibly name recognition. And you could argue the movies and Robert Downey Jr. have even changed that to a degree.
They've certainly upped Tony Stark, but not to the level of Batman.
Fair enough.
Batman, I think, is in a class by himself in many regards that way.
And like I said, for years, I would have said Spider-Man was too, but that's not quite the same either anymore.
What other ongoings has Batman had in, say, the last 10, 15 years? Batman, Detective, All-Star, Batman. What am I not getting?
There was the Dark Knight.
That's the one I was thinking of. Thank you. I'm trying to just toss all these up. Batman, the Dark Knight.
And then there was the other. There was the Battle for the Cowl stuff.
I'm not going to count that. It was too short to really kind of.
Okay. There was the Return of Bruce Wayne stuff.
Batman Inc. is the other one I was thinking.
And then I was going to say, there was the Batman and Robin, kind of the end of the Grant Morrison stuff, too, before Inc.
Oh, that's a good point, Batman and Robin. What I'm trying to do is toss all these onto a single chart and see, are there any kind of clear trends or whatnot?
And my guess is the one called Batman, which for the most part has been Bruce, is going to be head and shoulders above the rest, minus a few spikes here and there.
Give me a sec to add one more title. We forgot Batman Eternal.
Okay.
I went ahead and added Batman and Robin Eternal. Typically, the top-selling one is, let's see, Batman versus Batman and Robin, actually, at one point, was selling better than Batman.
Well, yeah, when it was Grant Morrison and, what's his name? Who's the artist that was
Quietly.
Yes. Like I said, minus some spikes. But I think if you go back another 10 years, it's going to, minus the spikes, it's the Batman title.
In most cases, it's Batman. There are a few spikes, like when All-Star Batman started or something like that. It's usually Batman. But it's funny because a lot of these are gravitating towards, like the current stuff for Detective and Batman around the 57,000-ish. The Batman and Robin Eternal, that was a weekly one that, it's funny.
The Eternal, really. I mean, that was almost an event, and at the time, it was almost a second tier event.
Yeah, those are anomalous between being weekly and just the cadence of them. So I'm going to take those off the chart.
Because there was the other Eternal that was kind of the mainstream DCU one that was really the main event almost at the time.
Well, there was Batman Eternal, and then there was Batman and Robin Eternal.
Okay, was that it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So taking those out, in a lot of these cases, again, you've got something like Batman, and then following a similar set of spikes, peaks and valleys and whatnot, but noticeably lower, you would have something like Detective. But again, right now, you've got Batman doing well, but All-Star Batman converging on where Detective is.
Yep. But both of those are still above 50,000, which is still a lot different than the 40 and 30,000 we were just talking about with some of those three other books.
Well, yeah, for a long time, like back in 2003, 4, 5, and early 6, Detective was doing right around 40,000. It then got a spike up to about 70, but then was down to about 50,000 for most of 2007.
But again, still very different than the 30,000s, you know, high 30, low 40s we were discussing for those other books we just talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, there I guess there is just something unique about Batman.
Well, it's something unique, but also the creators they've had since the start of the New 52 have clicked better than the ones they had prior to that. Because the Batman title is selling significantly better than it had been.
Yes.
Detective is selling pretty much better than it had been for most of that run.
Yep.
You know, they have the right?
But you've got to, I think, include Batman Inc., Batman and Robin, and the Battle for the Cowl stuff, and the Return of Bruce Wayne. If you go before New 52, because when Grant was running it, that kind of was the main book.
Battle for the Cowl lasted 3 issues.
Yeah, but that's 3 months. The Return of Bruce Wayne was the next 6 months. Batman and Robin was the continuation of that. Batman Inc. was the continuation of that, and then you got the New 52.
Adding those in, the Battle for the Cowl sold, okay, 100,000 to 90,000, but that's less than where Batman was at the time.
Well, that was coming out of RIP, again, a huge Batman event.
Batman, the Return of Bruce Wayne, did outsell Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
But that's not too surprising. You've got Bruce Wayne versus Nightwing and Robin, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's not just Batman. It's the Bruce Wayne Batman.
Yes. No doubt about it.
And him typically featured solo versus as part of an ensemble. And him as the title character, not just him as the feature character as he is over in Detective.
Yeah.
And some of it is as much what is the perception of what is the flagship title as anything else.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe there is just something very unique about Bruce Wayne.
They've certainly built up a good mystique around the character.
Yes. And like I said, at one point I would have argued Peter Parker was kind of second on that list. I don't know if that's changed, if my perception was wrong back then, or if they have changed that character too much.
Give me a sec to pull up the various Spider-Man titles, such as Amazing Spider-Man, and we'll take a
look.
All
the superiors.
Chart. It's easier when a title or a character doesn't have so many radically different titles and such, because what I'm having to do is essentially pull out of a list of literally thousands of titles the ones that are relevant for this. So we've got Amazing from various years and Peter Parker, which has 4 different titles over the years. Far enough back, I do for Web of Spider-Man,
and then the Spider-Man, the Spider-Man titled book, kind of before it became the Miles book, which is, you know, anything past, I don't know, what, 2-3 years ago at this point.
I will include the 2010 and 2016 runs of Spider-Man.
Okay, I would leave the 16 run out.
Fair enough. Now, the problem with charting this group of titles, and this is one that I've had a couple of times when I'm doing my articles, is there's 1 or 2 issues that are severely anomalous that get up to the 500,000 range.
Of course, yes.
So, you know, I've got to kind of filter those out.
Anyways, while John does that, this is thrilling listening.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, what I was going to say is a couple other things I will mention. You know, doing well in some ways that I think surprised me a little bit. Saga. Again, this one's not really a surprise. Number 46, over 40,000 at rank 34, slowly moving its way kind of up the list.
Saga's moving its way down.
Okay. In what way?
Sales. It's typically been doing in the 50 to 60,000 range.
Okay, fair enough.
It's been drifting down a bit. This is not the first time I think it's been this low. There was a period within the first half dozen or so it was at this point.
Top 35, though, seems about where it lands, and it's still there. It doesn't tend to break the top 20.
True.
So
it does in a, higher on the list on the trade side, and that's
much, much higher.
Yeah.
But on a relative ranking, 34 is pretty good for it. But again, I guess that once again points out how out of whack the top 10 is and kind of skewing everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some very anomalous stuff. I mean, I've charted, like, going back to the Spider-Man stuff, I've charted it having weeded out the weeks around when it was at the half million mark, and there's still a couple of things that are over the quarter million mark or in that range. And when you've got a couple of issues that do that, you lose sight as to where the realistic sales range tends to be. But even then, Spider-Man, I'm going to say right now at the mid 54,000, 55,000-ish range, more or less where it wants to be. It wants to be between 55 and 70,000 historically.
Yeah.
There are times it's done way better than that. Either because of or of Spider-Man events, real events, or just shenanigans. But it's, and there was again a time where it was, you know, in the 100,000 range or above. But in terms of where that title seems to gravitate towards or center at, it's a little lower than arguably it could be or should be. But
how far back does the chart go?
2003.
Okay. And again, I've made this argument for quite a while. I think the decision to make Spider-Man an Avenger and more involved with kind of the main Marvel universe was a mistake. And he's never quite been Batman-esque character at Marvel since then. And unfortunately, these charts kind of start at about where that point happens.
Yeah, more or less. I think part of it is not only that, where they've mainstreamed him a bunch as an Avenger and so forth, or hanging out as a teacher at the X school and such, but also of late with the Spider-Women, Silk, Spider-Man 2099, Ben Reilly, Venom, and Spider-Man as a power set or look isn't even that unique in the Marvel Universe. Literally, there are two Spider-Men.
But some of that stuff predates the era I'm talking about.
I'm saying it's compounded what you're talking about.
Yeah, now that I agree.
They took a character that was a solo, you know, down on his luck hero that, while respected in the hero community, it's the kid Spider-Man, you know? Versus, then he became an Avenger, he's teaching at the X school, everybody knows him, yeah, he's working for Tony Stark, he's brilliant, he's...
Well, now he owns his own Stark Tech, virtually.
Exactly. And add to that, so as a person, Peter's less of an everyman. Add to that that you've got an every Spider-Man-ish aspect of just how many Spider-Man-ish titles there are. He doesn't even feel the least bit unique that way.
Yeah, also true.
So they
not only is he less of an everyman, he's less of an every teenager than ever before. All those other things, even when he was older, the down on his luck, the having found his spot in the world, the trying to find himself, all those things, I think, led to that character's appeal for a pretty, I don't know,
Well, there was a point of he was out of college, he was finding his way, he was a young adult.
Yes.
Then they turned him into an adult.
Yes.
He's got the company, he's got the work with the Avengers, the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, the you name it. He's found his place.
Yes.
And he became a little less unique that way, a little less interesting. And then not only did he find his place, he found there were so many others just like him.
Yeah, also true.
You know, there was nothing, the uniqueness of Spider-Man and the struggle of Peter Parker vanished.
Yeah, that's really it. The struggle of Peter vanished.
Yeah. You know, it's...
Because a lot of those characters we're talking about, not all of them, but many of them predated this. But again, when Kane showed up and he was still kind of that out of college, looking for a job, down on his luck photographer, he dealt with that very differently than he will now.
Yeah, the characters may predate a lot of it, but the number of titles right now that are Spider-Man-ish in nature is staggering. And it's not the first time that we've had clones of Spider-Man having their own books.
Nope.
But we're now at the point where an entire generation of readers potentially has grown up with Peter Parker is not unique.
Yeah.
That's, I think, a problem. You know, there are other people that wear capes and cowls in Gotham, but there's one Batman, and there's not one Spider-Man. There's even a title called Spider-Men.
Yes.
Two, to make it more redundant.
And as I pointed out, the title called Spider-Man isn't Peter anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, is a whole different issue.
Well, when you've got Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and then Spider-Man, and they're different characters at times, and yeah, it's... They make this too confusing to explain to somebody.
Yeah.
I think Marvel right now is kind of at the point DC was at prior to, or actually right around both before and after Crisis on Infinite Earths. There were multiple versions of characters running around at DC in different worlds. Now they're on the same world at Marvel, and it just compounds the confusion. And it's hard to make a character feel unique when they're teaming up with another version of themselves. Whether it's literally another version of themselves, or a clone of themselves, or their mentor, or their protege, or what have you. I've often said that each title needs to have a unique reason for existing, and that's something that I think they've been very much struggling with over at Marvel, and I think it's getting worse and worse. We'll see what happens with Legacy, and if they've kind of, I don't say found themselves again, or what, but, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, what else do we want to talk about, or is there anything you want to talk about here?
Let's see, we talked about the non-series stuff. We talked about some of the Kirby stuff a little bit here and there. For me, it's one of those things that I think we're going to see some churn in the next few months, particularly at Marvel, as the current volumes end and the legacy ones replace them. Again, we're going to see a lot of change in issue numbering. And while it may put these titles back into a honeymoon period, it may not. I think it'll vary a little from title to title. And we're going to have a few that are actual new titles coming in, such as Master of Kung Fu, Power Pack, and such like that. Others that it's just they're changing the numbering, and it's really no difference whatsoever in storyline, creators, tone, style, or anything, potentially. Almost 3/4 of the list was at the $3.99 price point. Almost 10% was, 10% was above that. So I really think that return on investment thing is an ongoing struggle for comics and one that they need to manage better. Some titles are doing terrific with it, others are not.
Yeah.
You know, when we've got so many titles, selling, you know, below 10,000 or whatnot, and many in the 10 to 20 range that are Marvel and DC books and whatnot, we're going to see some churn. We're going to see some of these titles ending, getting replaced by other ones, and maybe they won't last long. Maybe they will. But with DC, they seem to have a more controlled phasing out of titles and bringing it back. For the most part, they've had a few periods where they've kind of sucked at that. Marvel, as they're shifting away from the let's do five issues relaunch, and going back to legacy numbering, I don't know how that plays out if a title doesn't work in, you know, for an arc or two, if they just stick with it and stick with the numbering scheme, or... Because if after all this to-do about legacy, they go back to number ones again, that would kind of annoy me. But to me, it all comes down to... Not can you get the reader to sample the book, but can you get them to come back? You know, we've got a couple of titles here, Robotech, Betty Page, and a few others that lost half their sales on the second issue. Some of that, again, maybe variant covers, maybe something like that. But the bottom line is they're not going to get those readers back usually on a third or fourth issue. If they do, that's a sign that it was retailers being a little too conservative. But often, again, all the charts I've been looking at for almost all these titles, it starts with a sale of X. The next thing's about, you know, anywhere from 2/3 to 1/3 of X, often about half. And then it just slides sharply down the next few. And then it gradually levels off. And by level off, it's still a downward trend. Whoever can figure out how to tell enough of a satisfying story chunk to keep enough people coming back to have negligible, if any, sales attrition on a regular basis, that gives them such a firm foundation to work from. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, going into next month, you know, we've already got over 1 million units gone from this top 300. That for it to maintain sales, it's got to have some major new launches to come in and do it. And skimming over the shipping list for September, I'm not really seeing them.
Are the legacy books not there yet?
Not yet.
Yeah.
And even if those sell well, how much of that's going to be because of the lenticular covers or stuff like that? And I'm going to be curious to see where the Marvel legacy books are after the honeymoon period and, you know, looking at those before, during, and after of these sequence of titles they've given us the list for. And sure, there's probably going to be a major blip, but within a few issues, it'll settle probably right back to where it had been selling.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, hopefully it's not the case, but you never know.
I'm not seeing any reason to think it won't be the case, because they haven't given any major shift of creators, storyline, direction, tone, style, anything. It's just we're renumbering and it's same old, same old. Now, maybe I'm wrong on that. I'm not saying I'm paying uber close attention and doing a deep dive on all the solicits and such. Just haven't had the time. But, you know, we've already got Peter Parker at issue 3 down at 41,282 units. That was pretty quick.
Well, and again, another one we can talk about, which is interesting, Venom, which we talked about a month or two, you know, last couple of months. The backup to 150, arguably the first of the legacies.
Yeah, I would say so.
141,000, and very quickly, 49,000, 34,000, 30,000 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for issue 151, and that's at rank 71.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a popular character, and I can see trying to put a lot behind it, but when it's had ongoing titles, it's frequently, you know, 30,000 or under.
And by essentially the fourth issue after the relaunch, assuming it loses more than 393 copies, it will be under 30,000 next month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you've gotten past the blips from the shenanigans on the numbering and stuff, we're back more or less where we were before. So if we use that as a forecasting method for how Legacy's going to do, we'll have a couple of months at best where it throws it into, you know, as if it were a relaunch, back into a honeymoon period or whatever with a spike and then the fall back to where it was. And it may be a very profitable month or two or three for Marvel, but if by the end of the year, beginning of next, we're talking and these numbers are back how they had been prior to Legacy, did they really gain a whole lot?
Yeah.
And maybe they will, maybe they won't. I mean, a lot of the numbers have drifted back to kind of where they were for DC, but I think between, certainly with Rebirth, they've gotten a lot more goodwill, a lot more interest, a lot more fan support, even if not sales necessarily. People are thinking more positively about DC as a result of Rebirth than they were, I think, before.
Hey, well, but again, that was just, what, 3 years after New 52?
Five or six.
Was it that
five,
many?
Okay. Five.
Yeah. So, you know, there's always the Marvel may get another shot at this again in a number of years.
They will, but I'm thinking they're going to have to go back to the number one well within a year.
Yeah.
And that'll be problematic.
I tend to agree. My assumption is there will be an event in the spring and we'll be talking number ones by the middle of summer next year again. Whether or not when they come out, who knows, but.
Yeah. Well, and again, there's an ebb and a flow of this stuff. I don't expect any title to stay on top forever, but there comes a point where.
Unless you're Bruce Wayne.
Fair. Well,
which we discussed.
Fair enough. But if I were one of these publishers, it's like, okay, I don't expect Superman to be up there all the time, but when I think he's going to be, let's really leverage that and deal with that. And, you know, then push, oh, maybe it's Green Lantern's turn. Figure out, stay ahead of the game and stuff. And even if you can't predict how they're going to sell, you've got the orders before the sales, you know, before the stuff hits the racks, you can do a little bit of I don't want to say gaming the system, but make it seem like you're building stuff up as you already know how it's going to do based on the sales.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the way they pitch this stuff is always focusing too much on what's next versus what's now, as you've mentioned, and it makes a lot of titles feel like that lame duck sort of a thing, and they're undercutting themselves, they're stealing their own thunder, and that's part of why sales continue to attrit. They're not gearing things towards sustaining sales. And, you know, if you've only got anywhere between an arc or a few years run before something gets down to just so-so sales, and you've got to replace, you've done something wrong. And the trick is figuring out what have you done wrong and how can you correct.
And, you know, there is an argument to be made that that's just the way media has gone.
True, there's nothing to say it's unique to comics, absolutely.
You know, movies are a big example. I know Sylvester Stallone likes to talk about, you know, how virtually destitute he was even when Rocky was winning, you know, a Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movie that grew slowly. And, you know, this was in the days of, you know, it would sell in different markets and they literally sold in the individual theaters and territories. And the movie do well in the, you know, the Southeast, and they take it to the Northeast, and they take it to the Midwest. And, you know, a movie like that, and, you know, he talks about literally he had an Oscar for Best Picture and still was worried about paying his rent. And then one day went to the mailbox and there was a check for multiple millions of dollars. But now movies, same thing. 99% of how well it's going to do is determined by that first Friday night.
Yeah. Well, and again, there's the world of difference between having time to build an audience and find the audience versus the minute that gets out there with, you know, 50 or 60 other equally or sometimes higher profile books. And you've got that evening, maybe that weekend, that week to make your dent.
Yeah.
Or you're doomed. It's a tough market.
Yeah. And again, not unique to comics. If anything, comics are behind the curve with some of the other media. You know, we've discussed movies, music, same thing. You know, bands used to put out individual singles and eventually you'd get to an album that would sell them multi-million. Doesn't happen anymore that way.
At least with television, there's only so many hours that the network can put out there. Granted, we've got more and more and more and more network, and we've got streaming, and we've got Netflix and all this other stuff, absolutely. But with comics, it seems like the publisher is sometimes shooting themselves in the foot by giving us 3 or 4 or 15 X-Men titles or Justice League titles or Batman titles or Spider-Man titles or whatever, you know. And I'm not suggesting that if they publish less that they will magically sell more. I don't think that's the case, but I think they are selling less because of the plethora of choice.
Yeah.
If we didn't have both X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue and Astonishing X-Men, maybe one of them would be considered the flagship book and selling higher.
Yeah. Well, and I've talked about this, and it's funny listening to you talk about your previews clips.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not a pre-order guy. I don't look at solicits that much. I'm not really in tune with it. But I've heard you even on a few times say, well, I had trouble finding something because it's not a number one or, you know, a good recommendation because everything's in the, you know, whatever.
You know, that brings up one other thing I want to mention along this.
Go ahead.
So starting with the having a hard time finding a pick, I get a ton of books, like 200 plus in a given order form. Yep. So it's not that I can't find something, but when I'm picking things for the preview spotlight, I'm trying to find things that I think other people will enjoy, not just something that amuses me, and something that has a good jumping on point. And when you've got, you know, a 6-part story, you've got maybe 2-3 jumping on points a year on any given title. And maybe that story didn't hit my radar or doesn't excite me or whatever. So, boom, if a title's got 3 chances over the course of a year and 1 or 2 of them, they just miss out of dumb luck and 1 or 2 I don't like, suddenly it's slim pickings pretty quick. But out of this list of the top 300, I've got, I think, 190 of them. Now, I haven't necessarily read them all because I'm a little behind on my reading still, actually quite behind on my reading still.
You made quite a dent.
I have, but I've got the equivalent of about 190 left to read. Not this 190 necessarily. I've read Metal and Batman and a few others, but like all the generations. But still, I mean, I've
got nowhere near the 400 it was the last couple of times we spoke.
No. I've made huge strides in that. and I'm hopeful, if not next time, but maybe the time after, I'll be able to say I'm current, but we'll see. But my point is, I've got a pretty good sense of what's going on in most of these titles. And for a lot of them to be selling where they're at, I kind of get. Others I'm always shocked and surprised at. And a few downright dismayed and frustrated by. I mean, Astro City selling under 10,000 units, I think, is a crime. Same with, like, Lazarus and a few others. When those titles are getting beaten out by reorder activity on that Batman Elmer Fudd special, which I agree, I've read it, brilliant, had some great stuff, was the best of the bunch.
It was the best of the bunch by leaps and bounds. Yes. I enjoyed some of the other ones, but it was 100 times, you know. And again, personally, it hits me right with two of my all-time favorite characters, but it still was far superior to all the rest of them.
But for it to do more in reorder activity than other books that I consider to be exceptional.
Yeah.
You know, when I see that there's a I don't know, 2 dozen unit gap or so between Astro City and Nick Fury, I see those as very different in quality in my mind. Now, obviously, the market doesn't agree. They think it's more or less the same. Always amazes me.
But again, I've said in the past, but it's probably been a year or so. I still think the average comic reader reads an average number of titles. And this constant push for what's the new number one inevitably has to rotate something out of the list.
Well, and that's why I think they should be going after having a unique set of titles that are, if you like this, you will like this. Not you'll sample it, you go for a couple of issues and then bounce off because something better comes along. But they need to get readers more, they need stickier readers, ones that are more attached and hooked on what they are reading, and not ones that are tangential or transient. And it's easier to lose one of those than to gain one of those.
I agree. But again, I don't consider you a transient reader in the least.
No, I think I'm anomalous in many respects.
I agree. But again, even you have said, when looking for your previews picks, you're kind of looking out for number ones.
Not just number ones. I'm looking for jumping on points.
Fair enough. Okay.
At the least, chapter one of a six-part story. There have been a few that I will recommend at issue 3 or something. Matter of fact, I did that last month, I think it was, with Ghost Money.
Yeah, and again, I don't really participate in the preview cycle. It's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see this. I'll sample that. I'll try that. And every time someone says, I will try or sample that, there's almost a de facto, that means I'm dropping something else. It maybe isn't the exact same month. It's not always one for one. But I do think in the long run, that's the way it works.
This is why I would love to have, even if it's only for a store or two, point of sales information.
Yeah.
If I had something that had customer X, and I don't need to know who customer X is, but I need an identifier for them, a number.
Yep.
This is the customer 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's got to be consistent from week to week. So whatever your number is, Sam, it's always your number. Yep. So I don't know it's you, but I know it's value 58 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the same person.
Yeah. What they bought, title, issue, cost, did they get the discount, whatever. If I had that over time for a store, I would be able to say, you know what? When they started up another X-Men title, people dropped this other title, or they didn't, or whatever. I'd be able to make that kind of correlation, whether it's causation or not, you know, as titles go up. You know, do people drop or add things with the legacy number or not? You need point of sales and reader information to figure out what are the buying habits. Are people, does customer X, hey, $20 is his limit every week or whatever the number is. It's so many dollars. And normally he would have gotten this other book, but it didn't make the cut. And guess what? Now it's off his list.
And to me, that would be, this is just my assumption or guess or hypothesis, if you will, that most readers, there's either a dollar or book number that stays fairly consistent.
I would imagine that to be the case.
And therefore, by definition, and I'm not saying when, you know, X-Men Gold started, half of the readers dropped book A, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But if half the people picked up X-Men Gold, that means those same half dropped something. It could have been a million different somethings.
Well, exactly.
When
the Dark Days, Dark Knight Metal stuff started, did that increase sales for DC at a store or not? Or did it cannibalize, and maybe not just for DC, but overall? Did it just move the dollars or did it increase dollars?
And my guess is most of the stuff cannibalizes inside the comic shop. Whether it's to an individual publisher, an editorial office, at a publisher, whatever. My hypothesis is most of those sales cannibalize from someplace else in that same, you know, in the direct market someplace.
Certainly stands to reason, because unless you get new people coming in the door or the people who have been coming in the door suddenly up their allowance of titles or dollars, if you're going on it's a capped system, which maybe it is, maybe it's not. I think predominantly it is. I think people may stretch their budget here and there.
But again, that doesn't happen. I don't think it happened consistently.
No.
Yes. Yes. It happens. Yeah. Maybe I got an extra two or three titles this month.
Yep.
But, you know, 6 months from now, it's going to be about the same.
I may, you know, instead of $20 this month, do 25 or something this week or whatever it is, you know, but on an exceptional basis, not on a regular basis. And that comes down to if you've got a customer base, where you've got that point of sales information and you can say, okay, this customer, this is their trend. It's all over the place based on what's coming out. Oh, it always caps out at this. In other words, there's some people that in theory, you could pitch anything to them and it's just they're tapped out. Yep. They don't have more time, money, or interest to spend on comics. There are others that are underserved, and if you pitch the right thing to them, they'll snap it up.
Yep.
You know, and that to me, there's so much stuff like that that could be learned from end reader information. It's not even funny. And I don't know that anyone is really tapping in on that and figuring out, you know, was it worth Marvel's time to do Secret Empire Brave New World or not? Or did that just sell to those of the people like me that are printing, oh, it's a Marvel book, I'll go ahead and get it.
But, and again, while I stated I think most of the cannibalization comes from inside the direct market, I don't think it necessarily is publisher by publisher. I think some of it is, but I think some of it isn't.
Absolutely. It's across the board.
So in that case, as a publisher, if you go, okay, well, it's a cap system, whatever. All you got to do is try to increase your piece, you know, your slice of that pie to improve sales for you. Now, the downside to that is just because you did it this month, someone else will do it to you next month, and, you know, everybody's kind of still in the same boat.
But it comes down to if you've got a new title and you get it out there, you know, it's presumably, because, I mean, the top 300 numbers kind of sort of back this up, too. It can fluctuate up and down by 2 million units, but it's a pretty set range it always stays between. You know, we've seen a couple of highs over the last year or two that are unprecedented, but not radically so. It's not like we suddenly crash through the 10 million unit mark by leaps and bounds and then next we're down or we're back up, you know, whatever. It's not that unpredictable. But when you've got that new title coming out, every reader who gets it conceivably is going to say, what does this displace? Now, not everyone has got a full list, and therefore it doesn't displace something every time. But I'd go, I don't know, 75% of the time, maybe it does, probably. More often than not. Mm-hmm. And then that when it gets displaced, everybody's got a different barometer as to what's on their list and what's at the bottom of their list to drop off.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point of it's being dispersed across the system is absolutely, I think, true. But it'd be something that I would love to see if there's a way to chase down, again, through end reader information, point of sale information. When they add a new title to a franchise, how does that impact that flagship book or not? And what are the different groupings of readers and behaviors that we could learn from that? And then based on, you know, things like a splattering of one shots for Generations or the Kirby stuff or whatever, how does that tend to get absorbed into the system and how do people tend to react to that? And should they have done it that way? Would they have been better off as a numbered series or not? And what actionable things could be learned from that that could change how comics are produced and therefore how they sell in a beneficial manner and get to where, not to say the sales start shooting through the roof, but they at least stop plummeting the way some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's something that if I were at Marvel and DC and could get my hands on that kind of a data, I would push to get some serious number crunching done on that and learn what you can learn and just start having some data-driven decisions on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying having data dictates stories or whatnot, but, I mean, we've had that in the past. The old Clone Saga went on for ages and ages because the sales guys saw that it was selling and said, keep going.
Yep.
There comes a point where it's like, ah, finish that story and move on. But I don't know. I think there's lessons to be learned that that haven't been yet. And that's why we're seeing so many of these things in the 20,000 and below range. And whatnot.
Yeah. And you said something very interesting. You said, well, extend that story. It's doing well. Or finish that story. Hurry up and finish that story. It's not doing well. And somewhere along the way, that went from finish that story or extend that story to finish that title or extend that title.
Yeah.
And I do think that was more, that is more problematic.
At one point, Peter David did an article of his But I Digress column in Comic Buyer's Guide, where he had, I forget, there were four things. I think it was creator, publisher, property, and something else. And he had them in a particular ranking, and that's kind of what he thought dictated sales. By and large, and again, exceptions to everything. But he used to be on the sales side of stuff, and part of why his run of the Hulk went as long as it did is he kept tabs on the sales. Oh, this isn't, it's starting to dip a little. Let's go in a little direction. Let's spice it up a little. Oh, let's, he was reacting to when there seemed to be a dip of interest in the book to spice things up and to keep shaking things up and make it interesting and keep people engaged. And it worked for a staggeringly long time.
Yeah, I mean that really is one of the last modern mega runs.
And I would say it's probably one of the earliest cases of some sort of data-driven storytelling influence in a very beneficial manner.
Walking Dead, actually, is probably the one newer one, but not much else.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I'm curious what we'll learn from the legacy stuff and how things move forward at DC when they kick in with Doomsday Clock or Countdown or whatever the hell that one's called, and these and the metal stuff keeps going.
Yep.
We talked about the price points. We talked a little about the issue numbers. I think that pretty much does it then.
I think so.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.